This is January the 31st, 1964, at the Chamber of Commerce Log Cabin. This will be a meeting of the officers and friends of the pioneers in order to prepare a suitable resolutions on three subjects. Say that again. Pioneer Eagle number 4 and auxiliary of
Fairbanks. Hereby wishes to express their great appreciation of the governors of the designation of Governor William Egan or whatever of Fairbanks.
I'll go further. I hereby wish to express appreciation to the governor.
Of the governor? No, of the choice by the governor.
Of the choice.
Yeah. By Governor
the choice of Fairbanks by the governor, or the interior of Alaska. Are you going to call it just the interior? Now that's the question.
Now that's the question.
That's a technical thing.
Well,
they won't bite very hard on unless we use the wrong word. If we use the wrong word, the word Fairbanks makes them feel mad, but it says the interior of Alaska.
Interior Alaska, yeah. At or near Fairbanks. I don't know if there's a big one.
Well, we could leave that blank since it's out and out this area.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The interior is covered with coverage because after all, we're going to serve the whole interior.
Yeah. That's fine.
As THE, the site for the new planning.
The site of the new branch of Pioneer Home.
Now, I'll leave this back to you. Pioneer Igloo 4 and Auxiliary hereby wishes to express appreciation of the choice of the interior of Alaska as the site of the new branch of the Pioneer Home.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I would like to suggest
there's a notice in the paper. You've got somebody here. And I got all the names. Maybe you didn't sign. Yes, you signed it. Yeah, it's a branch. That's stated in the bill. Yeah, it's stated in the bill. It's operated through Sitka as a branch at the governor's direction. Yeah, I studied that bill, so I know what it meant.
Number 4 and Auxiliary Number 8, Pioneers of Alaska, hereby wish to express their great appreciation of the choice by the Honorable William A. Egan, Governor of the State of Alaska, of the interior of Alaska, as the site of the new Pioneer Home.
You didn't get the word choice, did you?
Hmm?
You didn't
yeah.
Get, yeah. You didn't
of
read
of the choice by the Honorable William A. Egan, Governor of the State of Alaska, of the interior of Alaska, as the site of the new branch of the Pioneer Home. That's too many L's.
To the Honorable William A. Higgin, Governor of the State of Alaska, Igloo 4 and Auxiliary 8, Pioneers of Alaska, hereby wish to express their sincere and great appreciation of your choice of Fairbanks as the site of the Branch Pioneer Home. Any further changes in it? The chair is open for a motion. George King made a motion that this resolution be accepted as read, and Adolph Salk seconded the motion. Bill Schaefer? Bill Schaefer seconded the motion. I thought it was Adolph spoke up. Any further discussion on it? Questions? All those in favor signify in the usual manner by raising your right hand. The vote is unanimous. This is resolution to be presented to Igloo 4 at their regular meeting next Monday night. Next subject is the letter, telegram, or resolution, whatever you call it, to Bob McCombs for his speedy presentation of a bill for $2 million for the Pioneer Branch Home to the legislature. Now, you can hash that one over and prepare it, and I'll read it also. Now, I understand this right. Instead of any further resolutions or letters to Bob McCombs regarding his petition, the president of the Igloo and the Auxiliary 8 could write personal letters congratulating him on his speedy efforts in our behalf. Also, any other organization would be encouraged to do the same. Is that with everybody's approval? Now, that'll dispose of that subject. We've got one more. The next subject is the location of the headquarters of the Centennial Commission. As I say, Lee Link called me, and the president chamber, I talked to him on it, and they would like some encouragement, and the mayor of Fairbanks is going to make up a letter to be read Monday night, I believe, to present to the Igloo on this same subject, get the Centennial headquarters here. There seems to be a lot of feeling we should get behind it and help in any little effort we can.
That's right, but I think that'll take a regular job.
On this letter of recommendation to the Centennial Commission on the designating of Fairbanks as the headquarters for the Centennial in 1967, after considerable discussion, Irving Reed and Jack Link will come up with a proposed discussion on it, or resolution to be presented to Igloo 4 next Monday night. If there's nothing further I need in a record, I'll terminate the tape. And I want to thank all of you for showing up on this meeting, because I feel it's important that everybody have an opportunity to say something. The time is 9:15, and present at this meeting was Irving McKay Reed, Mrs. Eleanor Reed, Dorothy King, and George King of Eagle, and Vivian Gilvin, and Ruth Olson, Adolph Stock, William Schaefer, L.E. Link, and Florence Mansville, president of the Historical Society, and we terminate this meeting now. This is Harry Hughes, president of Igloo 4, on preparatory of these resolutions or letters, whatever the disposition of the Igloo is.
Well, I'm testing this dynamic mic about 3 feet away, and this is February the 5th, 1964. We've had a funeral today for Jorgen Krohn. He was born in 1902, and we buried him in the Pioneer Plaza here at Fairbanks, Alaska.
February the 6th, 1964, at the Chamber of Commerce Log Cabin. This is a meeting of the Pioneer Convention Committee with Pat Sather, Chairman of the Women, and Bill Cashin, Chairman of the Women, of the Men. Oh. I put him right over. Pat Sather was elected to conduct the meeting here at this gathering. Pat Sather gave a rundown of the previous committees that were set up for the Grand Igloo Convention, and now they're preparing to select committees and groups to.
Bill Stroker and Leo Schlofeld, Arnie Lee, Dan Jones, and another name in case those three don't accept either.
No, who's the chairman of that committee?
Bill Stroker. And who's the others, Pat?
Well, we've got Bill Stroker and Leo Schlofeld and Arnie Lee and Emily Abbott.
Bill Stroker, Leo Schlofeld, Arnie Lee, and Emily Abbott. That's four. Is that right?
Yeah, that enough? I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
Publicity Committee. Lean. It's Ip Lean. Tom Jensen. Charlotte Thomas on this committee. There's four on the Publicity Committee. The next committee is Favors. That means the. Vera Olson and Ruth Schreiber on this committee, Favors Committee. Sam Busby was suggested on that Favors Committee also. Adolph Stock will be on the housing.
Reservation and housing.
Adolph Stock's reservation and housing. Alaska Link will be on the Housing and Reservation Committee with Adolph Stock. Hugh McGowan will be an honorary member of this Housing and Committee. The next committee is Reception and Transportation. Gene Rogge on this Transportation and Greeting Committee. Gene Rogge and Sig Wold on that committee for transportation and greeting. Lou Sarlin. Registration committee is next. Igloo is Linda Schaefer. Hey, Long, Adrian, and Mary Stock on the greeting and. Wrong registration. June Thompson is the other member. The next committee is Hospitality. Coffee and Donuts, Mariel Thomas.
up. Dorothy Reedy will take care of the mug up at the Eagles Hall Thursday night. Faye Tyler on the old Alaska dinner, and Andy Anderson volunteered to get Buzzy to furnish us sheep, moose, and caribou. Low bush moose or high bush moose? High bush.
He'll be on the general committee, but particularly to look
at... Carl Parker's added duty will be to arrange for the drinks. The next is the women's luncheon. Elizabeth Bradford just volunteered to aid on this, on the women's luncheon. Isabel Richards will aid... Gladys Parker is the third member of that committee. The men's luncheon is Wally Burnett and who else? Bill Schaefer.
Stag luncheon.
And who else on that? It's resolved now that Bill Schaefer will be chairman of that men's luncheon committee. And Colin McDonald will lead Bill Schaefer. And Dan Jones on those three on this committee. They say not Dan Jones. It wound up Bill Schaefer, Frank Young, and what's the other one? Colin McDonald on the men's luncheon committee. Banquet on Sunday evening, isn't it? Earl Biasline, Betty Harrop for tours. Bill Cashin and Ivor Scarland, that's four. Adolph Stock will inquire to see if the four convention days at the Eagles Hall will be available to the pioneers only. Jimmy Dugan was proposed for emceeing the skits and the dance on Friday night under the hospitality committee. Now we're back to the grand ball again. Grand ball is Saturday night. And the old time costumes.
Now there has to be a couple of auxiliary gals.
Ball will be Ruth Barrick and who else?
Dan Jones.
And Dan Jones.
So far, we could name a couple more.
It was suggested Les Nerland and Mrs. Nerland on the grand ball also. Olga Steger's name is mentioned on the banquet committee. Olga Steger and Agnes Snowflake. Mm-hmm. Banquet. Agnes Snowflake. Olga Steger. And Ruth Schreiber, did you say two?
No.
No? Pat Rogge on the banquet committee. Mr. and Mrs. Nerland, Les Nerland, have been removed from the grand ball committee. And what did they put on?
Banquet
committee. Paul and Mrs. Graham has been nominated on the banquet committee. All of the Steger's name has been removed from the banquet committee and placed on the Pilgrim Memorial Committee. This is not Pedro, it's memorial service of the past pioneers that have passed away in the last year. On the advertising committee is Harry Hughes, Florence Manville, and who's the others? Harry Hughes, Florence Manville, Betty Harrop, Joe Kigger, and Alta Crawford. Present at this meeting was Pat Sather, Linda Schaefer, Isabel Richards, Merle Johnson, Adolph Stock, William Cashin, William Schaefer, Dorothy Reedy, Andy Anderson, Mary Adler, Elizabeth Bradford, and Harry Hughes. The time is now is 10:25 p.m. in the evening, and they're all tired and going home.
This is Friday, March the 14th, 1964, and this is a memorandum report. I was president of Igloo 4, I was asked to appear at the Ernest Gruning Social at the Traveler's Inn this evening from 7 to 9. And we had a Pioneer Memorial Park Board meeting. Paul Graham and Earl Weisslein, Jim Cassidy and Jim McDonald, and I showed up there before they adjourned, and got some records straightened out in regard to the corporation. The next meeting on that corporation will be March the 13th or the 12th. They're not quite sure till it gets close to time, but the next regular meeting will be around that time. This is Harry Hughes, just as a memorandum, so I won't forget.
Tonight, February the 27th, 1964, the Tanaw Yukon Historical Society met at the Chamber of Commerce Log Cabin, and the speaker tonight was J.P. McDonald, an old time pioneer here that has given his famous rock collection to the pioneers for the museum. And he told about his early life from around 1907 to 1915 along the coast of Alaska and around the Anchorage area in the early days, the Chickaloon district. And the meeting adjourned at 11 o'clock tonight. And that's all of this report.
March the 5th, 1964, Thursday evening, and P.J. McDonald is continuing his story. And he's talking from 5 minutes after 8 in the evening until almost 11 o'clock. And he's told quite a bit of the history of Anchorage and other parts of Alaska where he's been. We have now about 4.5 hours of P.J. McDonald's life story on tape for the Pioneers of Alaska and the Historical Society. That's the Tananaw Yukon Historical Society of the Interior of Alaska. This is Harry Hughes recording and terminating on this date.
This is March the 7th, 1964. And this is a meeting of the Convention Committee on the advertising and the booklet for the Pioneer Convention Program booklet. And present is Mrs. Crawford, Betty Harrop, Mrs. Florence Mansfield, Joe Kager, and Harry Hughes. And the time is 4:20. P.M. in the afternoon, and we're at Torgerson Plumbing Shop in South Fairbanks holding this meeting. After considerable discussion, and I presented the three bids that were made by Jessens Weekly, Commercial Printers, and the Letterpress Company, a new company here in Fairbanks. And after considerable discussion, it was chosen Jessens Weekly to be the official printer of the Pioneer Convention booklet for Fairbanks. The prices and costs were analyzed, and we will charge $40 a page for black and white ads, or $25 for a half page and $13.50 for a quarter page. And in addition to that, anyone wants a color page, it will cost approximately $10 a page extra for having it in color. The inside front cover is $60, the inside back cover is $60, and the outside back cover is $75. And the front is reserved strictly for the Pioneers Convention illustrations. And in the first part of the booklet, it's planned to have several pages of history of the Pioneers, the Pioneer Women, and the Auxiliary, and rosters of the officers and the program printed in here. And the purpose of this meeting was to get the thing reported to the Pioneers and get instructions to go ahead and collect the ads for the booklet. We stopped our meeting at about 5:25 p.m. Just slightly over an hour. So that's all to report for today. This is Harry Hughes recording my memorandum.
One, two, three, four, five, six, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
TV Channel 2 in Fairbanks, Alaska. Is your family growing? Is your house getting smaller? Are your nerves frayed? Bible is next in view on Channel 2, KFAR in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Pretty.
Now for Nightcap News Final, presenting a look at today's news and sports. The Title Insurance and Trust Company.
Good evening. Well, of course, the news takes on the very tragic scene which occurred here in Alaska this evening and is still going on, in fact, throughout the entire state of Alaska. First of all, let's review once again the report that we received first of all on the Associated Press Wire. A rundown on the first reported activity. Reports indicating that Anchorage had been badly damaged by an earthquake was the first report. We received that briefly here about 6:20 and then further reports confirming at about 20 minutes before 7. One report, the Anchorage International Airport, the control tower went down and 3,000 feet of runway out. That came in at about 20 minutes before 7 tonight. The Alaska Communication System in Fairbanks said that people are evacuating the ACS building in Anchorage earlier. The Coast Guard in Seattle said that a Lauren station at Ocean Cape in Alaska reported that there were tremors lasting about 3 minutes. The Coast Guard said that a ham radio operator reportedly said that structures were down in Anchorage in earlier report. In Ketchikan, a moderate tidal wave swamped a couple of boats at a resort north of the city. They were tied up at the dock. No injuries were reported at this time. Another report from Valdez that it was hit by a tidal wave, which tore up streets and cut off its water supply. Also, the Coast Guard checking reports that men at one of its stations in Alaska evacuating the plane. The quake was so strong that it knocked out the Coast Geodetical Survey measuring equipment in Fairbanks, which was reported to you on 6:30 news here on Alaska Highlights. The quake was felt at 5:37 p.m. in Fairbanks, 7:37 Seattle time. Now, earth tremors extended as far south as Seattle to give you sort of a view on how far this thing went. They rolled the waters in the lakes in Seattle, carrying houseboats loose from their moorings at Lake Union in the middle of downtown Seattle. Quake knocked out communications at Fairbanks for nearly an hour and some damage reported at Lightly at Arleson Air Force Base, 27 miles from Fairbanks. The quake described as the rolling type rather than the sharp shock. Alaska-bound planes had been sent back to Seattle because of the closing of the International Airport. About 7:30, we started to set up our communications here at KFAR and got the reports coming in that Anchorage, the runway, first of all, had been torn up. The tower was down, and the runway, about 3,000 feet of it, was wiped out. Other reports coming in throughout the area from Lieutenant General Raymond Reeves, commander of the Dawl troops in Alaska, under the command of Alaskan Command. He told General Lipscomb here at Fort Wainwright that 4th Avenue, the main drag, was completely flattened. Lipscomb said that Reeves had ordered the troops at Anchorage to stand by, and Lipscomb had his own troops ready if needed here in the Fairbanks area. A report from Captain Mayfield of the State Police. This is the first main report on the extreme damage in Anchorage, but about 100 homes in West Turnigan, a section of Anchorage which is located on the Cook Inlet, had been receiving extensive damage. 6 were reported dead. The figure could go possibly 10 times higher in that section of town. Numerous injuries. Downtown Anchorage between 3rd and 4th and between A&E had been damaged extensively, and extensive road damage north and south of Anchorage had been reported. We then received a report from a ham radio operator here in the Fairbanks area who had picked up that Valdez had reported 2 dead. The dead were picked up by the boat Chena. 1 was reported injured. At that time, they had no doctor and no communications in the town. There was no fire, and they said that they did have fire protection. Cape Yakutaga and Kodiak reported tidal waves of 10 to 15 feet, and no other damage reported at those two positions at that time. And the Fish and Game Department mobile radio unit at Anchorage reported that the governor's office in Juneau, as they started to set up the state civil defense network, reported between 50 and 300 with injuries in the hundreds, 50 to 300 dead, injuries in the hundreds in Anchorage. Other reports coming in throughout the night, and we've had some late reports just received here. We had reports earlier that through General Reeves and through Governor Egan, Providence Hospital had been asking for help in the area. Also, a report from Bob Risley, the Federal Civil Defense Coordinator for Alaska, that 45% of the buildings in downtown Anchorage were destroyed, taking in the areas between 3rd and 4th Avenue, Cordova, and E Street. Report the Anchorage Westward Hotel and the new State Court building, the only major buildings that survived. General Reeves told Egan that still no estimate of casualties in the Anchorage area, and he said the Providence Hospital had issued a call for some 60 more beds. Between 3rd and 4th Avenue, it was estimated that 50% of the buildings were destroyed. Between 2nd and 9th, 90% of the buildings destroyed in the Anchorage area. Most of the roads in the area had huge cracks, and motorists warned to stay off. Also, a call to Governor Egan estimated 50 dead in the Anchorage area. Other reports, too, that the Seward Highway had large crevices and no travel on that part of the highway outside of Anchorage. They were setting up some emergency shelters in the area, one at the Edgewater Inn, which could house some 1,000 people. Wayne Alaska Airlines plane with 8 Fairbanks doctors and other officials en route to Anchorage, and they'll be arriving there very shortly to do whatever they can. We'll have some more of these reports coming into the KFAR newsroom in just a moment after this important message. Hurry! The Coast Guard reports the situation at Seward. Seward had a tidal wave at 11:40 p.m. tonight. A tidal wave at 11:40, 3 reported dead, 1 injured, and more than 20 are reported missing. 1 dock is out, 1 dock remain. The oil tanker beached is on fire. Texaco and Standard Oil facilities are burning, and they cannot contain the fire. This is the report from Seward, Alaska, which was already heavily hit earlier in the evening. We've also had reports that Old Harbor, about 50 miles southwest of Kodiak, also reported wiped out. The city of Kodiak itself is reported flooded in the lower portions. Old Harbor, about 50 miles southwest of Kodiak, reported wiped out. The city of Kodiak itself reported flooded in the lower sections. We had reports earlier about the Standard and Texaco bulk tanks at Seward ruptured and on fire burning. One dock washed out. Tidal waves were 10 to 15 feet high. Sitka reports that one dock is out. Small crafts damaged and the petroleum gas pipe broken. All the downtown area evacuated and no injuries reported from Sitka. As we said, Wayne Alaska Airlines, an F-27 leaving Fairbanks within the hour with medics and medical supplies in case they be needed. And they will attempt to get into Valdez at daybreak also. And KFAR will have a reporter along on this trip to give you the damage at Valdez. Also, our sister station, KENI, will be covering the situation from Anchorage, and we certainly hope, upon hope, that beside the radio coverage, we can get some pictures from the Anchorage area on the tragedy down there. We'll have some more news here for you in just a moment after another important word. From ACS Kodiak, they reported there the tidal wave, one reported dead, a number of injuries in Kodiak, and as we told you earlier, the lower portion of Kodiak has been flooded, one dead from Kodiak. Now KFAR Radio has its lines down to Anchorage, with our sister station KENI was back on the air after reduced power. They'll be broadcasting all the details. Also, Paul Garwood is standing by down at the Civil Defense. And any latest bulletins coming in of importance will be flashed on both KFAR radio and television. We just received this message. This is unofficial, to Major General Carroll. Governor Egan has declared martial law in all disaster areas. This is unofficial to Major General Carroll of Alaska. General Governor Egan has declared martial law in all disaster areas of Alaska tonight. A very tragic scene for the entire state of Alaska as the earthquake has hit all areas of Alaska. And of course, the least hit by the area was Interior Alaska. The Kenai Peninsula was most heavily hit. We have heard nothing, no reports from the city of Kenai. Since earlier this evening, we had heard that they had called for help, but since that time, no reports on the city of Kenai. Palmer is cut off from Anchorage by road, but they report no fatalities in the Palmer area. And those are the latest reports we have, and of course, KFAR Radio is right now running complete coverage of emergency broadcasts. That's our Nightcap News final for tonight. Thank you very much, and good evening.
It's now 12 p.m.
Someone would please relay this message to his wife and family in Seward. It certainly would be a...
...the spot coverage in Anchorage.
Someone behind me was bumping into the car, and when I finally became aware that an earthquake had hit, it was most obvious just by people in the streets, running in the streets. So I got out of the car, left the motor running, and got into the middle of Fifth Street with maybe 15, 20 people who were out there. And we stood more or less holding each other up. And within about, time is difficult to tell, couple of minutes maybe, the walls of pennies began to shear off, and the cars parked at the curb, including mine, were just buried under the rubble. But I saw no indication of anyone in the street being injured at that time.
And then I guess you proceeded down to the Anchorage Times building to survey any damage there?
Yes, I started running for the Times building. A woman stopped and gave me a ride and she turned at the corner of Holy Family Church. I went inside and ran into Father Murphy and told him that Penny's building looked very badly damaged, and that suggested that he should go down there right away, which he did. And I went into the Times building, and the building appeared all right, but inside was a shambles.
How about your equipment?
It was hard to tell. It was just buried in, under all kinds of glass and debris.
You will be able to go to press in the morning.
I would have any way of knowing, but I doubt it. We have no power or anything.
I understand you have gotten word out to the AP, to the outside world.
We've gotten word to the AP at Juneau, which still has communications landline.
This is radio station KFAR, 660 on your dial in Fairbanks, Alaska. We have an emergency message just aired to us from the Civil Defense Headquarters here in Fairbanks. This is regards to Valdez. At present time, the fires from the oil riggings are out of control in Valdez. 26 men who were on the docks there are missing and are presumed dead. Once again, in regards to Valdez, the fires are out of control. 26 men who were on the dock are missing and are presumed dead. Also, Soldanta and Kena, no injuries and some minor damage. Soldanta and Kena, no injuries and some minor damage. We'll now return you to radio station KENI in Anchorage.
The street, which we did, and the utility poles were swaying, and a water main blew up across the street from us, and big cracks opened in the pavement at our feet. And huge trailer trucks parked in the back of the Daily News building toppled over on their side. As far as our own operation is concerned, we're a shambles. It's hard to say just how extensive the damage is. It's serious. The building was damaged in at least two corners. One wall caved in. I, just as Bill says, I'm very doubtful that we'll publish tomorrow. We'll try, but I'm very doubtful.
You then have no way to estimate what condition your equipment is in either?
No, I can't say. The damage is extensive, but it depends on just exactly how much of the machinery actually was destroyed or damaged. And it'll take us about 2 days, actually, to estimate how much the damage was. But it's expensive.
It is expensive. Do you have any other observations of the general scene, either then or now, Bill Tobin?
Well, itself is an incredible, just to walk around and see it all dark. And I'm impressed by the way things are being run here, which certainly is orderly. They seem to be getting things done. We still have no official indication of what the losses are, except we all held out to find no argument with the mayor's word that the damage is very extensive.
Well, we have received word, too, that this earthquake has had extensive reaches throughout the state of Alaska. And that though they have not pinpointed the center of the earthquake, nor have they been able to establish the intensity of it, that it has been severe enough, they are expecting, or possibly have already.
KFAR 660 on your dial in Fairbanks, Alaska. We are once again experiencing some trouble in the line between here and radio station KENI in Anchorage. We will return to KENI as soon as possible. First of all, the Valdez Business District is reported on fire, and the 26 men who were on the Valdez dock are missing and are presumed dead. Also, Soldanta and Kenai report no injuries and some minor damage.
Drive with caution. We understand the hill coming down there right along in the
vicinity of the dog pound, and the city prison farm is unusually dangerous. So if you're coming up on that hill, drive with extreme caution, for DeBar Road is reported to be in very serious condition. Yes, Cass, did you have something to say? We're on the air.
London is calling, wants to talk with somebody from a news media. They'll be on the line. Can somebody come forward and talk with them?
Yes, I'll be very happy to. I'll be with you in just a moment. All right, we have to make a report to London right now, so we will return KENI to the downtown studios.
I can take it for just a second, Bob, if you have a minute. Go right ahead. Thank you. We have several messages, and I'd like to alert Fairbanks that we're going to have two messages for them to relay in just a moment after we get through with these local messages that are rather long and involved. First of all, we have more shoulder available at 447 East 13th. There is room for two or three people there in a vacant apartment. That's 447 East 13th, room for two or three there. First, a message here on the local scene to Paul and Betty Cruz. Their daughter Katie is with the Trick family and is fine. To Paul and Betty Cruz, their daughter Katie is with the Trick family and is fine. Second of all, we have, we're going to have a meeting here at the Public Safety Building at 3 a.m. for the following people. There's quite a long list, so I'm only going to read it once. There will be a meeting here at the Public Safety Building at 3 a.m. for the following people: George Beyer, E.N. Courtney, Sol F. Faulkner, Frank Beeman, David Green, Clifford J. Groh, C.A. Hostetler, George Chirac, Joe Yasinski, Marvin Davis, R. Everett Harris, Glenn McKee, Ben Boeke, that's B-O-E-K-E, Dr. David Duncan, Miss Irene Griffith, Robert H. Oldwin, Lyman L. Woodman, Robert Hernstein, Lieutenant Colonel Douglas Clore, Mrs. Connie Wilson, James P. Bell, Joe Petronovich, Robert E. Green, Wallace Slennis, Elizabeth Kirby, George Burns, Roy Sampson, Mrs. Alice Rudin, E. Jack Shoup, that would be E. Jack Shoup, John Flanagan, Captain A. E. Hornet, Orrin Hillman, Jack Easley, Larry Eastland, William Morgan II, Charles Bynum, George Easley, and Jack Harris. Those people that I have just mentioned are requested to meet here at the Public Safety Building for a meeting at 3 a.m. That's approximately 3 hours hence. If necessary, I will repeat that list later on. Two messages for Fairbanks. We got a phone call from Fairbanks earlier requesting concerning the safety of Delmer Pettis. He has just come to us here in the Kenai camper. He is all right, and would appreciate if Fairbanks could get that message to his son, who is Delmer Pettis Jr. in Fairbanks. And as long as we are putting out personal messages over the air, I would like to personally request Fairbanks to put in a person-to-person call to Mr. Jack Hooper of radio station WKBO in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. He would appreciate a report on the activities here in the Anchorage vicinity. And while you're doing that, please also ask him to get a message to my parents in Harrisburg that I, as far as I can ascertain, am all right. I am Bill Berry, B-E-R-R-Y. Once again, that's Jack Hooper, H-O-O-P-E-R. Person-to-person collect call to radio station WKBO in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Bob, back to you.
Well, as far as I can ascertain, I'm in pretty good shape myself, Bill. And this is a good way. This is what happens when I get up to come back to work, see? Well, it's now another day. The earthquake was yesterday. It's 7 minutes after midnight. This is radio station KENI in Anchorage, Alaska. This is Bob Fleming along with Don Hill and Jamie Chance, you're at Civil Defense Headquarters out on Bootleggers Cove. At our transmitter site is Ty Clark, and the cars are Charlie Gray and Don Porter and Daryl Comstock. Yes? Yeah, okay. Just one second, I'll give it right to you, Otto. I want to tell them that Captain Smith and Harold Honeywell of Pacific Northern Airlines are at the 4th Avenue building on the third floor. They're sleeping right under me, apparently. this is a message for Fairbanks. Bob can get it out up there in Fairbanks. Bob Decker's in Anchorage are okay. The Bob Decker family here in Anchorage are okay. Also, we've learned that the lights came on out there on Fireweed Lane, and Maxine's Beauty College is all lit up. And it's apparently every light in the place is on, and I think that maybe this is there's sort of a waste of electricity out there, electricity they badly need, so if somebody can go down and turn a few of those lights off at Maxine's Beauty College, why, it'll probably still be just as beautiful. Otto, do you have something there?
I just had a report to you, Bob, from Channel 11, and they heard a report from KFRB in Fairbanks that Governor Ian has declared martial law and given General Carroll authority to activate all of the state's National Guard troops in the Anchorage area, and those outside of the Anchorage area will remain here in Anchorage for the time being. I also have some urgent messages here. One to the Costin family in Homer, and Jane Costin is safe here in Anchorage, and she would like to know how they are faring in Homer. Mrs. Ruth Deans and Jerry Deans are fine in Anchorage. They want to know if Richard Deans and wife are okay in Nome. And then I had a call from Mrs. Lee Calderwood. She is worried about the C.R. Lewis children, wants to know if they're okay. She believes they are in the hands of the housekeeper or uncle who may have picked them up, and she would like to have the housekeeper or uncle call Lee Calderwood at her number, Fairfax 21360. That's about all from here right now.
This is radio station KFAR in Fairbanks, Alaska. We have two bulletins just off the Associated Press. First of all, the Valdez Residential District is not on fire. The Valdez Residential District is not on fire, just the business district. But there is no water to fight the blaze. Once again, the Valdez Residential District not on fire. It is the business district is burning at this time, and there is no water to fight the fire. Also, as you heard just a few seconds ago, Governor Egan says no martial law has been declared. General Carroll suggested that the National Guard be continued on active duty throughout this emergency. Governor Egan says no martial law declared. General Carroll had just suggested that the National Guard be continued on active duty throughout this emergency. This is radio station KFAR in Fairbanks, Alaska. We now return you to our sister station, radio station KNI in Anchorage.
Emergency. Is that the message that you were going to relay?
That's right.
Okay, well, that message came from Don Hill. I said it, but he's the one who said it. Really. Okay, and I think that the Kenai camper has a report now. I think I heard them calling.
We have several messages. First of all, from the Anchorage Fire Chief, he reports to us that International Airport is closed for this evening. There is approximately 1 million gallons of jet fuel on the ground out there, and he requests that no traffic, emphasize absolutely no traffic, will go out in the International Airport area. He says, possibly by mid-morning, the airport will be open again, and if so, we will notify the people of the Anchorage area, but until that time, please do not go anywhere near the International Airport area. There is approximately 1 million gallons of jet fuel on the ground, and it's a terrific fire hazard to even drive in the area. That request directly from the Anchorage Fire Chief. A personal message from Jack Thornton to Dave Friend, who has Georgia Sparks. Mr. Thornton is here at the camper, and if anyone knows the whereabouts of George Sparks, please let us know. We'll pass the message on to him. That's from Jack Thornton to Dave Freund, F-R-E-U-N-D, friend, thank you, F-R-E-U-N-D, who has George Sparks. And although I've had no reports here or requests, we just had a person come up to us at the camper and wondering whether or not they need blood at Providence Hospital. We've had several volunteers here at the camper, and we would like to know whether or not Providence Hospital or any of the other Air Force and Army hospitals need blood. Bob, back to you.
I was just telling a story in connection with the earthquake here in the control room. Might as well repeat it on the air, I guess. As I mentioned before, I was caught in a hospital when this earthquake hit. And when I went up to the hospital, the main part of the hospital where the patients were, I was walking down through darkened quarters. There were no lights, of course, and talking to a few of the patients, and we were helping a few of them out. Several of them were pretty much unnerved by the earthquake. Naturally, they would be. One lady who had just had an operation, but her children were out in the car waiting. And we helped her out to the car, and she sat with them, and she felt fine again, and the children did too. But there was so much debris strung around the hospital, and I stepped through one door and bumped into something, and I couldn't tell what it was. It was very dark in there, except that blood was running out from under the door. It was some of the plasma that had fallen and broken on the floor, and this gave me quite a start. And I'm sure that other people who came into the hospital afterwards ran into the same situation, as it probably did in most hospitals. The Providence Hospital apparently didn't suffer very much in the way of damage, and was pretty well able to absorb the patients from other hospitals that had to be evacuated. I say hospitals, I only know of one that was totally evacuated, and that was the Presbyterian Hospital. And the patients were moved out of there. And very quickly, too, many people gathered around with cars offering their use of their station wagons converted to ambulances, and they were calm in the face of the fact that we could smell gas in the building and smell ether. Many people went back into the building, that building, and others again and again to help others out and extend their help. None of the KEMI remote units have checked in lately. I don't know where they are. I know that Daryl Comstock has been out in one. He was in the Turnigan area, and reports that the damage there was quite extensive. We won't know probably until morning. Won't be able to assess the value of the loss. And as a matter of fact, it's difficult now with night and snow and all that even to get enough civil defense people together to go into all these places. In many places, homes in the Anchorage area have actually dropped into chasms. And whether people were in these homes at the time or not, in many cases, we still don't know. And we won't know until morning comes and help can get to them. In many cases, help will have to be lowered by rope. It'll take a crew of men to get to even get one.
They are in Fairbanks, Alaska. We are momentarily having difficulties with the line through to KENI in Anchorage. We'll return to that broadcast as soon as these technical difficulties are cleared.
It looks like my new building, which is a friendly Ford building, and they didn't even lose any windows in that one. That's about all the real major damage on East Fifth Avenue. I noticed some lights have started to come on again. The outpost is on. The Civil Defense headquarters is fully active, and they've set up a real big radio net all set up. So that's about the extent of the damage on East Fifth Avenue. Two major buildings just demolished, but the other buildings along the way, a few windows broken here and there, but that's about it. Okay, Bob, back to you.
Well, thank you very much. I just was taking cognizance of all the Kenai crew that's working, and practically the entire crew is working now. I am sort of hoping that some of us would be grabbing a few hours sleep while so that those of us who are up right now will later on be able to lie down for a few little while and get a little sleep, because it's going to be quite a while before the reporting part of this will begin to subside. In fact, as the daylight hours come around in the morning, the reports probably will get more vivid and more descriptive than they are now. As soon as the sun comes up, then we can take a look around us and see what the extent of damage is in the surrounding area. There probably are.
They are 660 on your dial in Fairbanks, Alaska, bringing this emergency broadcast. We will return to radio station KENI as soon as we are able to clear up some technical difficulties.
As far as I know, we've had no report from Kodiak. And we don't, many people have asked what the earthquake damage might have been along the Aleutian chain. Some of these reports have been given. I know some of them were early reports, and some of them were skimpy and sketchy. And as the night, whether this tidal wave has ever hit here or not, I don't know as yet. It was predicted some time ago, and as far as steadily in there since we talked to him last, Otto, do you have a report for us?
I have just one message here right now, Bob. Mrs. John McGee just called, and she would like to reach her aunt, Mrs. John Reagan, who was employed at the McKinley Gift Shop. She hasn't heard from her since the quake, and also her husband, Mr. Reagan, who was employed with the Marston Real Estate Company. So here's another one. Here's another one I have. Robert Pelkey, is that it? Robert Pelkey is okay, wants to know about his wife, Beth, Acutin.
Acutin,
there I go, I'm a Californian. Okay. That's all I have from here, Bob.
Hey, I'm getting a message here from Lady. Maybe I can just switch this on the air and then save me a lot of writing.
This is getting very garbled, and I'll change and put on a new reel. These are intermittent reports that have been coming in, and personal messages being delivered by KENI Anchorage to Fairbanks and other parts of Alaska and out through the rest of the world.
This is Radio 660 on your dial in Fairbanks, Alaska. We have just received this message over the Associated Press wires. Sitka has been very lucky, only slight damage in harbor and channel, with a couple of boats loose, but that is all the damage that Sitka has received. Once again, Sitka has been very lucky, with only slight damage in the harbor and channel. A couple of boats are loose, but that is all the damage. This is KFAR Radio, 660 on your dial in Fairbanks, Alaska. Alaska Standard Time is now 12:30 a.m., and we return you to radio station KENI in Anchorage.
Yukon area has been cordoned off. It's been declared that it's under martial law at this time. And, of course, this is to help protect people and help protect property. Fourth Avenue, one of the main streets of Anchorage, has a large section of it sunk. How much did that, do you say that sunk, Jim? How much did Fourth Avenue sink where it sunk? Oh, you mean on L Street there? No, not L Street, on Fourth Avenue. L Street, no, I haven't heard about it.
This is a tape recording of a report on a private tape recorder of Harry L. Hughes at 920 14th Avenue at Fairbanks, Alaska, during and just after an earthquake in the whole of Alaska. The conversation now is through wire from KENI Anchorage to KFAR Fairbanks.